This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the globe. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by Ronan Seagrave in Winnipeg in Canada. He's our North America correspondent. Welcome to the show, Ronan.
Good evening, Henry.
Interesting to note that here in Australia, we do not get a lot of news media from Canada because it always seems that Canada's a tranquil place. People leave their back doors open at night. But this is different. We're getting news about this whole trucking thing. And look, I have not researched this. Perhaps you could explain to our international audience what is actually going on, especially in the capital.
Sure, Henry. This protest started as a result of people protesting against vaccine mandates or passports, which have been imposed by both the Canadian federal government and the US federal government. Trucking in Canada involves a lot of cross-border transport, you know, goods and items coming from the US into Canada and to some degree vice versa. And on both sides of the border, truckers are required to produce verified evidence, such as through, you know, vaccine passport and QR reader, that they are doubly vaccinated. And if they can't, they are not permitted either into the United States or into Canada. And the first thing I want to make clear, Henry, is that national and provincial trucking associations in Canada are completely opposed to these protests and are pointing out repeatedly that the vast majority of truckers are working and that the over 90% of truckers are fully vaccinated. But so this has started with really a sort of a fringe element of truckers who are not fully vaccinated, objecting to these requirements by both governments. And it has been seized upon, Henry, by other fringe elements. These include people who are opposed to any type of public health measure, including wearing of masks in public places, COVID conspiracy theory types who believe the whole thing is a hoax, people who are on the far right of Canadian politics who want the federal government basically overthrown and are no supporters of the current Liberal government and the Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. So this is all sort of coalesced in a protest, and I actually got caught up in the initial convoy, Henry, that travelled across Canada, coast to coast, and was heading to Ottawa. And I just happened to be in the area where they were sort of congregating a few kilometres outside Winnipeg, very near where I live. Mm. And they basically choked up all the roads for hours, constant noise, honking of horns. Now, I want to be clear with the listeners, this is exactly what I saw. I saw, apart from Canadian flags, Confederate flags, which is a flag, Henry, as you know, associated, let's be blunt about it, with racism. And I also saw Nazi imagery, including swastikas and including Star of David images on trucks, all of which I never thought I would see in Canada, but sadly I did. That convoy, Henry, then moved its way in towards Ottawa. And there was sort of a major protest outside the federal parliament buildings in Ottawa. And last weekend ensued a number of incidents around that. There were various police reports of people urinating by the tomb of the unknown soldier, desecrating a statue of a Canadian hero called Terry Fox, who was a young man who had his leg amputated with cancer and then ran across Canada raising millions of dollars for cancer research and died as a very young man. And he's considered a national hero. And they continue, Henry, to this point right now, or at least a proportion of them, to essentially what's now being described by politicians as an occupation of the parliament area.
Sorry to interrupt you. Just in case people don't know, Ottawa is actually the capital, is that right?
Ottawa is the federal capital of Canada. It's a province of Ontario. If anyone has visited Ottawa, it is really completely dominated by people working or supporting the federal government.
Which is, of course, very like Canberra in Australia, which houses our parliament.
Absolutely, Henry. And a couple of developments today. Number one, the protest has been marked by constant sort of honking of horns. And a lot of people do actually live in the downtown core of Ottawa, and an injunction was actually placed this evening in relation to the protesters to cease and desist for at least 12 hours a day of honking and horns, so actually people can get some sleep. There have also been legal action, Henry, to prevent what have been described as supply lines into the protesters, are supplying fuel and food and other essential items. There was another incident last weekend, Henry, where apparently some of these protesters sort of besieged a homeless shelter and demanded meals, of which they were not given any. The interesting thing at the moment, Henry, is the politicians are all saying that they want the protest to end. The problem is none of them are saying, Henry, how that is actually going to happen.
Yes.
Now, there's been sort of noises this evening about a sort of much tougher approach by police in terms of sort of moving in and trying to ticket people. But there's a feeling that that actually may not be, in actually trying to tow vehicles. There's a feeling that that might indeed be sufficient. And there's been sort of various talk about the military moving in. Now, that, Henry, obviously could have significant consequences in terms of people resisting that type of aggressive
riots,
action.
Yeah.
But there continues to be noises by Henry. Everyone wants it to end. No one exactly knows how that is going to happen and in what way that is going to happen.
It's interesting. It's very obvious that a lot of people are jumping on this bandwagon, these extreme right-wing people.
Absolutely.
And it's like a chance for them to, do their thing. It's an excuse. Do you think, a lot of this protest is obviously about people who don't want to be vaccinated. Do you think they have any justification in what they're doing at all?
No. I think it is perfectly reasonable in the context of a global pandemic and to reduce the transmission of COVID-19 for federal governments to be taking this kind of action. Now, I think what governments are making clear, Henry, is that no one sees these requirements as permanent. Hopefully we're moving to a better place with the pandemic where COVID-19 becomes endemic. Though I was reading some kind of scary data about six African countries are most at risk for another variant to emerge on. So we also have to be on our guard. But right now it seems to be moving to a different place. And I don't see these requirements being permanent. What I don't know is how long they will last. And that's an assessment that needs to be made by both federal governments taking advice from its public health experts. So we are hearing, provinces around Canada. And by the way, Henry, what makes this a little bit ridiculous is that mandates around masks have nothing to do with the federal government.
Is that a state thing?
Yes, but it's provinces. Yeah, those are rules of the province. Now, we're in a cycle, Henry, where virtually all provinces in Canada are looking at easing restrictions. I mean, they're talking in Manitoba about potentially all restrictions being dropped in April. Alberta's moving in that direction. What's interesting about this is happening at a time when some of these restrictions are inevitably probably going to ease and end at some point over the coming months, making some of this perhaps a bit pointless. But I do think it's important for listeners to understand, as you said, Henry, the hijacking of this by far-right elements. And, the two of the organisers of this protest have made it clear that they want the overthrow of the federal government. Now, call me old-fashioned, but I'm a Democrat. And Justin Trudeau, based on policies, including around vaccination passports and public health measures, was returned as Prime Minister in a minority government. And whatever way you look at it, centre or centre-left parties have the majority of seats in the Canadian Parliament. And the only way, Henry, that Justin Trudeau or the Liberal Party should leave office is through the voters. And there'll be an election in another 3 years. So
that's a long time.
That to many people is quite frightening and quite disturbing.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Winnipeg in Canada. I'm Henry in Sydney. Interesting question here, Ronan. We both live in big countries and we have federal politics or federal governing, and we also have state or provinces in your country. Do you think that federal government should control everything that happens in the states with regard to vaccines and what you've just been talking about with different provinces doing different things? Should it be all federally controlled?
I think that's a great question, Henry, and that is being actively debated now. I mean, inevitably there are going to be sort of large-scale sort of public inquiries and reviews around the whole response to COVID-19 across Canada. I think one major gap here in Canada has been the absence of a FEMA-type agency or a federal emergency management type agency of the type that exists in the United States.
Yes.
I think if we had had that, Henry, we would have had certainly much greater coordination in relation to things like PPE, in relation to things like testing. Whether or not, Henry, recommendations aside from that coming out of this is kind of federalized going forward, I think that would be resisted by the provinces. And we also had, Henry, really quite variations in terms of COVID-19 transmission in cases. For example, Atlantic Canada provinces might object to very draconian measures in the future, whether it's COVID or any future pandemic, when there might have actually very few cases and the risk might be very low. So I think that's an issue, Henry, that's going to be debated. But I think that the case for much more stronger federal emergency management and a FEMA-type agency is a slam dunk for me, and it's something that I would like to see happen.
I'm surprised you don't have one, actually, in Canada.
I think it surprised a lot of people, Henry.
Maybe you never needed one before.
I think it's also had been the increasing forest fires that we're having in the summer have also, quite frankly, driven this. Also increased flooding at springtime, the threat, and we had a terrible fire season the last year with entire towns in British Columbia being burnt down. So I think those things are also coalescing here to create, I think, a very strong case for setting up that type of agency at a federal level.
Do you think your Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, I'm interested in knowing, I know the last time we talked, I think it was only last week, actually, he was in a hidden place.
He has re-emerged.
He's re-emerged. How is it affecting his popularity?
I don't think it's affecting his popularity at all. I think that, people who are supporters of Justin Trudeau are in no way going to support this. I think to be really clear about this. There may be people who, at least at one time, supported the Conservative Party, but they've largely abandoned that and moved to sort of fringe far-right parties like the People's Party of Canada, which again is traditional stuff, opposed to any kind of public health measures and anti-immigration, that kind of thing. The reality is, Henry, and I think what's going to be interesting going forward is going to be the kind of dichotomy of these forces. Canada, for me, is by and large a very centrist and frankly right now centre-left country. That the heartlands of conservatism remain the Prairie Provinces, and that's really about it right now. And that reflects facets of Canadian people, which are around trying to get consensus, around trying to deal with things reasonably, not having policies in any particular area that anyone could see, either from a right or a left-wing perspective, as terribly extremist, and explains why the very centrist Liberal Party has actually been in power for the vast majority of Canadian history. And as far as I can see, Henry, it could be in power for a very long time. The risk for the Conservative Party, and we've had a number of MPs, meeting these truckers, and also, Henry, just adding to the pot, the Parliamentary Party recently, last week, ousted its leader, Erin O'Toole, having lost to Justin Trudeau in the last election. So they're now facing yet another, this will be Trudeau onto his fourth Conservative leader, they're now facing another election campaign that will happen over the next coming months. And I think if the Conservative Party tacks right and becomes more populist and sees a growing populist movement around this, I think that's electorally disastrous for them, to be frank.
Let me just clarify this. You said while Trudeau's been in power, there's been a change of leadership in the opposition.
In the Conservative Party.
Four times?
I mean, the first person that Stephen Harper, that Justin Trudeau faced was Stephen Harper.
Yes.
He was the outgoing Prime Minister that he defeated.
Yes.
Then they went, and I can see the man's face, Henry, and I'll Google him in a minute. They went to this guy from Saskatchewan, and what was his name? I'll get it in a minute, Henry. He looked like a sort of dodgy insurance salesman, and he was a social conservative. He lost to Justin Trudeau in the 2019 election. Then the Conservative Party had yet another election and elected Erin O'Toole. And while he started the election campaign quite strongly, Henry, he was flip-flopping around sort of vaccine mandates. He sort of hitched his star somewhat disastrously to one or two kind of unpopular premiers in the country, and ended up really getting less seats than the Conservatives got in 2019. So O'Toole made a really big effort, Henry, to stay on. And in fairness, he had a powerful reason to say that. He said, look, I am the kind of unifying force of this party. I am the person telling you that we are not going to defeat the Liberal Party and Justin Trudeau by tacking further to the right. That's clearly not where Canadians are. Mm. We need to stay in the centre and perhaps, you know, a greater, you know, focus on fiscal conservative and things like that. But that doesn't seem to be, Henry, with the ousting of Éireann O'Toole, where things might be heading. I think there's a real risk that, that the Conservative Party does tack a bit further to the right. If that's the case, Justin Trudeau will be absolutely delighted.
Of course he will,
and,
yes.
And it's there was talk, actually, Henry. Justin Trudeau has now turned 50. Don't be totally fooled by those youthful looks. He's actually been around. Oh. He's been Prime Minister now for 6.5 years.
Yeah.
There was talk of him, you know, potentially sort of stepping down and, you know, handing. There's no talk of that right now. Mm. And, you know, he's able to govern quite comfortably, Henry, with the support of two parties. One is the more left-leaning NDP that support him in policies like $10 a day childcare, and the Bloc Québécois, who he's played footsie with by sort of granting further powers to the Quebec government. So there's not, you know, he's very secure right now, Henry. Trudeau has held a line that he's not going to meet these truckers. He's condemned the protests, and that he's working with all levels of government, including the mayor of Ottawa, the provincial government led by Doug Ford, to try and find a solution. Though, Henry, he has no particular answer either as to how this might end.
Yes, and it's interesting. You mentioned that he's in a comfortable place. He's in a good place, is Trudeau. Given that, he got in by the skin of his teeth, really, didn't he?
He did. I mean, the last election was a total non-event, Henry. I mean, we Trudeau went into the election as a minority government seeking a majority. Mm. He didn't get it, and more or less ended up with the exact amount number of seats, a few more than he had prior to the election. So it's a continuation of a minority. But nobody, Henry, this time sees a kind of dash to an election in the next 2 years. I think there's a sort of consensus that this government really has to last more or less a full term. And there's no reason why it shouldn't. As I said, the NDP have every incentive in terms of getting concessions, getting some of their policies in place to continue to support Justin Trudeau.
If I was to talk to you, let's say, in 2 weeks' time with regard to these protests, would you be able to tell me a different story?
Well, I think this really depends how this will end. There's two scenarios, Henry, possibly three, actually, how this can end. One, the protesters decide they've made their point and decide peacefully to leave Ottawa. And I should remind listeners that they're not only just in Ottawa. There are
Calgary.
Outside of Calgary, here in Winnipeg, outside our legislative building, where again there's talk now of legal action around honking of horns. So that Toronto, they're happening in many major cities across Canada. So the best case scenario, Henry, is they all decide they've made their point, and they decide to pack up and go home.
Is that wishful thinking, Ronan Seagrave?
At this point, yes, but one has to be an optimist.
Yes, indeed.
And the second other, so that's one extreme in a good way. Mm. The other extreme in a bad way is that patience by Trudeau, Mayor of Ottawa, even by the provincial government, has become exhausted. They refuse to leave. The disruption to local residents and to local businesses has just become intolerable. And there's a decision to either send in riot police or the military, or a combination of both, to essentially clear.
That was actually my next question. Are they going to send the army in? Because it seems like the next obvious step, really. I just read a report last night, our time, regarding this protest, and alarmingly, the mayor of Ottawa, I think, said the protesters are outnumbering the police.
Yes, that's a concern, Henry. And the mayor of Ottawa has been, I think, the first to really start talking about the military. Now, Trudeau has said, no, we don't want to go there. But he absolutely, the sheer numbers of these protesters do outnumber the police. So the police sort of going in on their own and attempting some operation themselves even as, you know, towing trucks and trying to remove people.
It must be nerve-wracking. It must be nerve-wracking for them.
There's also talk, Henry, that certain people, admittedly unconfirmed reports that some people there may have guns, and that's another concern. Jesus. So, you know, I think if that happens, it is likely to involve some form of military support, perhaps not the military leading it, but potentially they're nearby and available to assist if needed.
Could that add flames to the fire?
It would. I mean, a third scenario, Henry, is that the authorities decide to wait this out. They, you know, aside from maybe more issuing of tickets, taking injunctions to stop the honking, they decide basically to starve them out by sort of, you know, cutting off their fuel lines, cutting off their food, and perhaps a sort of gradual melting away. Melting away is another scenario that perhaps could happen. Any combination of these three things, Henry, could happen. At the moment, we just don't know. Obviously, my wish is that this does end peacefully. I do not support this protest and what it's trying to achieve. At the same time, no Canadian wants to see bloodshed here. So if we can avoid that situation, that's a good thing.
Has anyone taken a poll to find out the percentage of people who are against this? And I'm guessing that the percentage is very high, but I'm wondering if anyone's done a kind of a
not
poll.
Yet. I believe it's underway. I mean, what we do know is that overwhelming majority of Canadians, over 70%, have supported public health measures in relation to COVID-19 pandemic and controlling transmission and spread of the virus. The most popular premier in Canada is the premier of Quebec, who's probably taken the strongest action in you know, making vaccines mandatory for healthcare staff and things like that, probably taken the strongest action in relation to public health measures, and his popularity is soaring. So the vast majority of Canadians, Henry, support and understood the situation and the severity of the situation, have complied with public health measures. Our vaccination numbers are high in terms of getting up to 80% doubly vaccinated. So these measures, Henry, have broad consent. Now, at the same time, everybody, including myself, wants this pandemic to end. But I think Canadians are also sensible enough to realize it's not going to be some kind of big bang action, but a gradual easing of measures in light of an improving situation.
I just we've got to go soon. I just want to ask about this whole business of these trucks. What about distribution of products and stuff? Is anything getting to people?
Well, I want to stress here that the trucking associations, both the federal trucking associations and the provincial trucking associations, have been very forthright in condemning these protests and pointing out repeatedly that 90% of truckers are fully vaccinated. 90% of truckers are still... I mean, if I was driving to do some shopping this evening, Henry, I can assure everybody there were plenty of trucks coming up. So the vast majority of the trucking industry is still working and still supplying goods across Canada. Yes, we're being impacted here, Henry, by supply chain issues associated with the pandemic that other countries have. We have soaring inflation here, as other countries have, and likely rises in interest rates. And you're going to the supermarket tonight, Henry, you know, it was hit and miss on some products, if you know what I mean. The basics were there, I want to stress that.
Yeah, toilet paper.
plenty of toilet paper. So, you know, that's a global phenomenon, also being impacted by rising oil prices and gas prices here because of demand now exceeding supply. So we're in for economically quite a difficult period. No, this doesn't help, but I think what the trucking associations are saying is that the impact actually on supply chains is quite marginal.
Interesting. So I guess you don't know the end of this story. It seems to go on forever. Just finally, before we go, with regard to vaccines, now, you know, I'm double jabbed, and now I'm in 2 months, I'm allowed to get a booster. You know, I was looking into this. Are we going to be taking boosters for the rest of our lives?
I think that's. I mean, I had my booster shot back in December. I think this may become, Henry, similar to something like flu vaccines. And flu vaccines are
once a year.
Once a year, and they're adjusted and tweaked in relation to looking at transmission patterns and things like that. We know that vaccine manufacturers such as Pfizer are working on tweaking vaccines in relation to Omicron. So it's almost a certainty, Henry, that at some point I'll be getting the fourth shot of a vaccine that is now more effective against Omicron. And the simple answer to that, Henry, is we don't know.
Yeah.
The wild cards here are, is Omicron really the last big sort of global variant, and therefore it may be an annual booster and antiviral drugs now on stream. We get a control of this thing and get back to some kind of normality. It becomes another endemic disease, becomes more seasonal in the winter. That's a very possible scenario. And in that scenario, Henry, it may just well turn into an annual shot. In other words, people are looking at the virus and how it's mutating.
Yes.
The risk still remains of another nasty variant emerging, particularly from, I looked tonight, Henry, it was six African countries that have, fortunately, spectacularly low vaccination rates. So
I saw that, and we should be looking after these people, you know, because we're shooting ourselves in the foot if we don't, you know.
Now, of course, a variant could work either way, Henry. It could be similar to Omicron replacing Delta, which in a way was a good thing, Henry, because Delta made people...
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, the viruses are at war with each other.
Yeah, they crowded out, and yes. Omicron is far more contagious than Delta. Was not the same impact in terms of severity of illness. So a variant could work either way. My view, Henry, COVID is a long-term problem in some shape or form. The virus is probably with us, certainly for you and I, Henry, for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
The issue for me is that we get the planet vaccinated, the global pandemic ends and it becomes endemic, and it probably may become more seasonal. We may be getting annual booster shots, and we now also have antiviral drugs. And I want to stress how important they are, that, you know, in the case of somebody feeling a bit ill and potentially has COVID, popping a pill here, looking at the clinical trials of these, is about 90% effective in avoiding hospitalization. So we're constantly getting better tools to manage this, and we will manage this. And I want to assure listeners that in time, we will get back to some sense of normality, and we'll get back to doing the things that we enjoy safely.
And talking of time, we're out of it. Roland Seagrave in Canada, in Winnipeg, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure as always, Henry. Take care.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Man got his woman to take his seat. He got the power, she got the need. She spends her life through pleasing up a man. She feeds him dinner, anything she can. She cries alone at night too often. He smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Man makes your hair gray. He's your life's mistake. All you're really looking for's an even break. He lies right at you. You know you hate this game. Slaps you once in a while, and you live in love and pain. She cries alone at night too often. Drinks and don't come home at all. Ooh. Only women bleed. 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 got the need. She spends her life through pleasing up a man. She feeds him dinner, oh, anything she can. She cries alone at night too often. He smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Only women bleed.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by our music guru, Adam Devlin, in Brisbane, in Queensland. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hi, Henry. How are you going?
How's Brisbane?
I'm loving it. It's I'm not liking the weather. It's far too hot for me. We're in El Nino at the moment, which means we have really high heat and really high humidity.
It's actually La Nina.
La Nina,
it's the other one.
Okay.
That's crazy weather, isn't it? I mean, we have pouring rain in Sydney. It's the middle of, late summer, I guess, now.
But didn't somebody warn us about this?
Sorry?
Why didn't somebody warn us about this climate change thing?
Oh, God, I don't know. I think our illustrious government should have warned us, but oh, no, they don't know about that.
No. Anyway. Well, they know about it. They just don't care about it.
Well, yes, that's true. We will be talking about politics soon on this show. Now, interesting, your pick of the week. It's Carly Simon, of course.
Yes.
I just want to point out something that intrigued me, listening to her singing this song, off air. The thing about, I don't know how to put this. When men get older, like Bob Gallico, who sadly passed away, as broadcaster and a colleague here on Bondi Tunes International. I noticed that as an old man, he was in his 80s, men's voices go up when they get older, whereas women's voices go down when they get older. Isn't that interesting?
It is. It's very interesting. And, you know,
it's the same with singing, you know?
Yeah, we just recently did a pick of the week with ABBA, and, you know, their voices after 40 years are an octave lower than they used to be. And it's amazing because they become deeper, they become richer. Whereas men's voices, as you said, tend to become higher and thinner. It's odd.
It is odd. And the reason I mentioned that is because I listened to that song from Carly and it's definitely different, you know? I could feel it just seemed to be lower. I mean, she has incredible range, let's face it. She always has. But the lower part of this song is noticeable.
And her later albums, of which this is off, one of her later albums, you know, her voice has dropped an octave or two. She doesn't do those really high notes that she used to do at the beginning of her career anymore. Mm. And that's fair enough. You know, the human voice is a live thing. It changes as we age. Mm.
What age is she?
But yeah. Carly is 76.
Oh my God. it's a new 56. Let's face it.
Well, it is. Yes. And I just, you know, a little tidbit to the side here, something interesting that I've discovered today, actually, as I was researching this song. Carly Simon has now basically, her wording was, "I don't consider myself not gay."
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. She said, you know, she has that side to her personality, to her being, that she said in an article that I read that she's never really explored. But she doesn't consider herself not gay.
It's an interesting way of putting it, because she's not saying she's gay, but she's saying she's not gay.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, she's had some interesting relationships over the years, especially back in the 70s with what's-his-name?
Warren Beatty.
And
James Taylor, her husband, of course.
Of course, who she divorced.
Yes, and she dated Cat Stevens for a while.
Did she really?
Yeah, in fact, her first single, Anticipation, was written about waiting for him to turn up to take her out on a date.
Hmm. That's very interesting. Did he arrive?
He did.
That's nice to know. You're So Vain, let's talk about that.
Yep, massive, massive song. Her biggest hit, her signature tune. 1972, massive hit.
$64,000 question, who was it about?
Well, she's come out to say that it's actually each of the verses is about a different person.
Oh, that's a good cop-out.
She said part of it is about Warren Beatty, but parts of it are not about Warren Beatty. So she's very tight-lipped on who each of the verses is about. Mm. So, and I don't think we will ever know.
I guess, you know, at this point in time, does it really matter?
Well, it's also part of the intrigue of the song is not knowing.
Mm, absolutely.
And so something would be lost if she was to come out now and say, okay, verse one is about, you know, Mick Jagger, verse two is Warren Beatty, verse three is Cat Stevens, verse four is James Taylor. If she did that, a bit of the mystique about the song would be lost.
Yes, it must remain mystical thing. And is she in a relationship at the moment?
No, she's not. Mm. She lives on Martha's Vineyard in America.
Beautiful place.
Small island, yep. Mm. She lives in the marital home of her and James Taylor. She got that home in the divorce and she's lived there ever since.
Oh.
And she just lives her life she did lose a lot of money in a big Ponzi scheme scandal in America.
Mm.
So she lost a fair bit of her money in that. And so she doesn't do nearly as much as she used to do. She had a bout of breast cancer as well, and made a full recovery from that. But, you know, she still writes songs and records.
Obviously, she's still recording, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the album that the song I'm playing today isn't a new album as such, but it's from the year 2000, but it is from the second half of her career.
Right.
You know, obviously the main peak of her career was the 70s.
Yep.
Then she had a bit of a resurgence in the 90s with Coming Around Again in 87. That sort of kicked things off.
That was from the movie.
Yes.
What's the movie? I can't remember.
It's Heartbeat. Yes. Heartburn.
Heartburn.
Yeah. Heartburn, yep. Mm,
great film.
Yeah.
I love that song too. It's such a beautiful song.
Yes. Mm. And then she, of course, wrote Let the Rivers Run for, and I'm just trying to think of what that movie was for. It was for Working Girl, and she won the Oscar for that, for Best Song.
Wow.
So she's got a couple of Grammys. She's got an Oscar. You know, she's one of the most, well, it's generally regarded that in the 60s there were three women who established the female singer-songwriter genre, and they were Carole King, Joni Mitchell and Carly Simon.
Right.
The three of them were all operating at the same time,
all doing the same style of music, all three of them very different to each other, but it working in the same genre. And until that happened, there wasn't really a female singer-songwriter movement anywhere. And so those three are generally regarded by music academics as the beginning of you know, that industry that exists now with people like Alanis Morissette and Adele and Billie Eilish, you know, those sort of... Carly Simon was one of the originators that opened the market up for these performers.
They were trailblazers, weren't they, really?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Especially with women singing, because they sort of were their own selves rather than just being part of a band where men were dominating.
And they didn't just sing poppy three-minute love songs, which is what predominantly women were singing up until that point.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden they were singing about real emotional issues, real complex song structures that really, you know, were at least the equal, if not better, than anything most of the male singer-songwriters at the time were doing.
Yeah, do you think...
And really did kick that glass ceiling to pieces.
Yeah. When you mentioned, you know, singers of this era, if you like, the likes of Rihanna and those, do you think that they look back or up to these people who, these women who are trailblazers?
Absolutely. I think they do. Well, I know they do because they're constantly being referenced in in interviews and such. Of course, Janet Jackson had two massive hit singles in the 90s. One was taking samples of Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell. And the other was taking samples of You're So Vain. And did a song called Son of a Gun. And, of course, the line Son of a Gun is lifted from You're So Vain.
Yes.
And actually got Carly back into the studio to re-record some stuff with Janet Jackson for that song. So, you know, they're regularly held up or mentioned as influences of you know, many, many people today. Even those artists like Rihanna, as you said, who aren't, and Janet Jackson, who aren't performing in the same genre that Carly is in, but so much respect for her that they want to, you know, thank her for what she did.
It's interesting that their fans probably don't even know this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I watch a few reaction videos on YouTube, and I was watching one the other day of the Janet Son of a Gun song, and the young couple that were watching it were going, who's Carly Simon? I don't know anything. What's Carly Simon? Like, and they did say, we're going to have to do some research and find out who this Carly Simon woman is. And so
I keep
going back to their account because I'm assuming that at some point they'll start doing a reaction video to some of Carly's stuff.
Sorry, excuse my ignorance. What's a reaction video? They do a video of themselves listening to the song. Is that right?
Yeah. And then they post it on their channel and people watch it. People... it sounds bizarre, but I have to say I'm a little bit guilty of this. I've sort of become a little bit hooked on reaction videos.
You know what? Now that you mentioned it, I did see a girl doing this. She must have been 17. I think she said she was 17. And she put she had the music playing. And I know this, I can't remember the song, but I know it was from the 1970s. And she was, I think it was the Eagles, actually, Hotel California. And I was listening to her talking about this as if it was written yesterday, because she'd never heard it before, and it was fascinating seeing a reaction, as you call it, from a 17-year-old girl talking about a song that's been around over 40 years. It's bizarre.
Look, I've watched some for the new ABBA stuff that's out, and these people are, you know, they're late teens. They weren't even born when ABBA was first recording. They weren't even born when ABBA broke up.
This is true.
And it's just amazing watching them then go, oh my God, this is so amazing. This is so unlike anything else I've ever heard. And then they start doing reaction videos to earlier ABBA stuff. And you just see their minds blowing.
I must look at this stuff. It's on YouTube, reaction videos.
Yeah, so you just put, like, the person you want to see the reaction of, so, like, ABBA reaction videos, and there's hundreds of them there to look at.
Oh, I'm going to get addicted to that, I think.
Yeah,
It's a slippery rabbit hole to go down because I've been stuck in it now ever since COVID's been around. Ever since I've been housebound.
Yeah, gosh.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yes. Okay, well, let's get to this song by Carly. Give us an idea of what this is about.
Yeah. It's off her album from the year 2000 called The Bedroom Tapes. And it's an amazing album. It's one of my favorite Carly Simon albums. But in it, it's called The Bedroom Tapes because she recorded it, her vocals, in her daughter's old bedroom in her home.
Hmm.
And so she called it The Bedroom Tapes.
How interesting.
Yeah. All original songs, and one of the songs deals with her mental health issues that she's had throughout her life.
Hmm.
She's suffered from extreme anxiety. When she was younger, she stuttered. She had a really bad stutter.
Was this before she was famous?
Yes.
Okay.
And in fact, her mother, when she was a child, sitting around the dining table, Carly couldn't even ask for, like, pass me the salt or anything because she just couldn't get it out. And
because
her mother,
of the stutter, right?
Yeah, because of the stutter, because of her anxiety. The anxiety triggered the stutter.
Where was the anxiety coming from?
Well, we don't know.
Well, the reason I ask that is because, you know, a lot of children get anxiety because of the atmosphere in the family home.
Yeah. Well, she had her parents had a dysfunctional marriage to the degree where her mother moved her lover into the family home.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And she's hinted in her memoir that she was at least a male tried to sexually abuse her when she was a child, but she doesn't go into too much detail about that, so I don't know if she was abused or whether it didn't happen. I don't know. But yeah, and her mother, as I started to say, her mother when she was a child said to her, look, when you want to say something around the dining table, tap out a tune on your leg with your hand and then sing what you want to say. And she found out that by singing, she didn't stutter when she sang.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've heard this before.
And yeah, a lot of people who stutter don't stutter when they sing. And so she said for a period of her childhood, she just went around singing everything she wanted to say.
Wow.
Yeah, but, you know, she did spend some time in a health retreat, in inverted commas, in her early... sort of as her marriage with James Taylor was falling apart, to deal with her anxiety and just the stress. And, you know, she didn't feel that she was coping with life. And so she...
I just want to get back to the stutter thing for a minute.
Yep, sure.
She obviously conquered that. I'm just wondering how she would have done that. I mean, she can't sing all her life and not talk. So I'm imagining that she either got help or she just worked on it herself to stop the stuttering. Or does she still stutter? I don't know.
She still does occasionally stutter, but she basically, through treatment for her anxiety and such, got to the point where she can control it now, mostly.
Right.
Yeah.
A bit like Joe Biden.
Yes.
He has a stutter. He had a stutter for years. You just control it. Yeah.
Okay. And so one of the songs on this album deals with her going inside to a health retreat, as we call them, to get help for her anxiety. And I've read an interview with her where she talked about this song, and she said that when she was in hospital, she was imagining her friends sitting around having a dinner party without her and talking about her.
Ooh.
And bitching about her behind her back. And and so she wrote this song called We, Your Dearest Friends.
Oh.
It is one of my favourite all-time Carly Simon songs. Lyrically, it is insanely good. And so it's basically just the story of a group of her friends sitting around talking about her while she's not there.
And it's based on a true story of her situation.
Yes.
I wonder what those friends would think now when she's one of the biggest singing stars in the world.
Yeah, well, let's just say she certainly had the last laugh.
Yes, indeed.
But, you know, some of the lines in this song are just brilliant, like, we, your dearest friends, judge you guilty here and now of thinking you're a star when it's all over. Nobody wants you, and we the least at least of all. It's been a long time since you've had those famous lovers. You know, really cutting, scathing lines.
Mm.
we've bonded here in faithlessness to undermine your happiness, toying with your paranoia. Everything you do annoys us. It annoys the hell out of us. So, you know, it's a gritty, gutsy song. And the sort of, but it also has a great sense of humor to it as well. Mm. And I love that sort of, that yin and yang of, you know, pain and humor in the one song. It's one of those songs that every time I listen to it, I get something new from it.
Mm. You mentioned that this is from around 2000?
From 2000, yes.
Just before you present this, is she actually releasing songs at the moment?
She's not, but she is writing at the moment.
Okay.
Now, of course, the reason I've decided to do Carly Simon today is because the nominations for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees in 2022 have just been released last week. Mm. And finally, Carly Simon is being nominated for an induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I thought I just wanted to honour her today by doing a pick of the week.
Incidentally, who is she up against?
Dolly Parton.
Oh,
yes.
That's a bit of a challenge.
Yep. Dionne Warwick. Kate Bush. Eminem as well, the white rapper. And there's a whole bunch of other people who I hadn't really heard of.
That's interesting that I would have thought it would be a female version, male version, but no, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. Mm. If like me, you're a Carly Simon fan, you can now vote, because this is done by popular vote.
Oh.
So the body, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, produce a list of nominees that they think are worthy, and there's criteria there as well as to how you get nominated. Mm. And I think it's got to be 21 years or 25 years since your first recording. And then you can be nominated. So, and you've still got to be relevant in the industry. So, now, Carly has been nominated this year. So if like me, you're a big Carly Simon fan, go to the website for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and vote for her. She needs to get this.
So there's no panel or anything like that? Like the, you know...
Well, the panel comes up with the nominations.
Right. So they vote as well? Is that the way it works? Or...
Well,
they've nominated people. Okay, I get that.
Yeah, so there's the list of nominations. It's now up on their website for public voting. And the highest...
It's purely public voting, yeah?
Yeah, and it's three or four of them. I don't know how many will get in, but the three or four top number of votes will be nominated, will be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Mm. And is that televised?
No.
Interesting.
But the website's quite good. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame website is quite interesting. It's easy to navigate around. You can see who all of the people that are in there. You can see the nominees for this year, and it tells you a bit about each of the nominees, so you can go through, and it takes you to their site, so you can listen to some of their music if you want to. Mm.
Who needs television anyway? I mean, Jesus, the internet is so powerful.
Well,
you know, that's the way I see it.
Most of what we watch now is on YouTube as opposed to free-to-air TV. We hardly ever watch any TV now.
Yeah, one has to wonder where television is going, particularly commercial television, but I guess that's another story.
Yes.
Adam, would you like to present this for us?
Absolutely. Look, Carly Simon is a major figure in the music industry, one of the most successful female singer-songwriters of all time. She, as I mentioned earlier, she's one of the trio that kicked off the female singer-songwriter genre. She's continued to work throughout her entire career. She is working at the moment, so there's new music that will be coming at some point. But today, to honour her nomination for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I wanted to play one of my favourite songs of hers. It's a bitchy, emotional
but joyous song as well. It's off her album, The Bedroom Tapes, from the year 2000. The song is called We Your Dearest Friends. I love it. It's classic Carly Simon. I hope you love it too. Here it is. Enjoy.
We, your dearest friends, are having dinner without you. We're witty and we use it to be vicious. In just another minute, we'll be laughing about you. To the untrained eye, it wouldn't look suspicious. We, your dearest friends, don't really care if you have needs. Your hopes and dreams are trivial by our standards. We make fun of how you sing, and then we imitate your speech. And the stupid things you say, we like to slander. But we won't wheel you out too far, 'cause after all, it can and will be used against you by us.
The sun never sets. on the iTunes.